Hey guys, and welcome back to the Way UK podcast. My name is Jesse, and I'm joined by the wonderful co-host
Zenya,
and we have a very special guest with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Your name is
Joshua Luke Smith.
Joshua Luke Smith.
Yeah,
was JLS taken?
It was, bro. I tried to get the domain name.
Yes.
It wasn't. Yeah, had to go to the full name.
I quite like it. It's like powerful.
Yeah.
Full name, no abbreviations.
Well, shout out Steve and Lucinda Smith because they're the ones that came up with it.
Hey, come on.
Love that.
And Joshua is many things. We'll hear about in a minute. I don't know you too well. We were just saying, like, I don't really know much of your story, but the small pockets that I have heard about you and the small things that people have said about you, about a few friends on your writer's course, it's been awesome.
Oh.
And so I'm really excited. Are you excited?
No, I'm so pumped.
We met David's tent.
We did. I'm so excited to be here. I'm honored to be here. I've been hearing a bit about your story and how this has all come together. And it's a joy.
First question. So like bandanas around the neck,
bro,
coming back into fashion.
The neckerchief.
Ooh.
This is more a lineage piece. This is a shout out to my grandfather.
Okay.
More so than, you know, whatever the current trend is, because he would wear one of these.
Wow.
And then I saw a guy in Spitalfields Market selling them. Do you know what? I'm going to do this because you got to see this design.
Okay.
This guy makes these prints. Felix Green.
Whoa.
That's so cool.
And so I picked it up and a couple more. And every time I put it on, I do feel like
I feel like a panther,
but honestly, I feel like there's a sort of a nod to my grandfather. Like he would wear these, and
that's pretty cool.
I like it. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It's generational.
Generational.
Yeah.
And I'd love to just hear a bit of insight into your day to day, where you are. Mm-hmm. Does this mean you can't wear it the rest of?
I mean, I can't. As we're talking, I'll fold it again. You can see the ritual. But yes,
I feel like I'm missing it.
I know. Me too. Like my neck felt incredibly cold. Just like,
For the Spotify listeners, he's taking it off. I guess. What are you up to? What does the day to day look like?
Yes.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
I love that question.
Very simply. But also, what do you love? Not just what do you do? What do
yes,
you
yes.
Do?
No, I love that question. It's such a better question than what you do, you know?
Mm.
What's a day in your life? So I am a dad and a husband. I got two kids, a four-year-old and a two-year-old, and they're amazing. And so my day begins with them, ends with them, often has them in the middle.
Yeah.
And I'm married to my beautiful wife, Kara.
Mm.
And that's the main event. Okay. That's my life, you know, that's my world revolves around them. And alongside that, I'm writing poems. I'm in prisons doing poetry. I run a writers group called The Write Club, Write the Good Write. And I host that every week. And I'm traveling and I'm sharing poems and I'm pinching myself a lot of the time that I have these beautiful children and this amazing wife. And I get to write and do what I'm doing. Eugene Peterson, who wrote The Message, paraphrase of scripture, said the pastor and the poet have the same mandate to speak into the chaos. And that's a lot of my life, you know, both speaking into the chaos of my internal world and then by his grace being in these situations where I'm able to do that for others as well. So it's a beautiful mix, a real beautiful mix of time with family and time creating.
That's really cool.
And you are very blessed to be doing what you're doing. And you, like, God has blessed you with such incredible gifting. And we'll get onto it and we'll talk more about, like, how you got into poetry. And we know that you told us off camera that you're about to go and write some stuff and be in the studio.
Yeah.
So I just thought maybe this could be like a warm-up session for you right now. just to get the, you know, creative juices flowing. And just get you into that mindset for later. So I thought it would be fun if we did a little poem off, poet off right now. Right here live on the Way podcast, which is something you weren't expecting.
No, let's go.
But we're going to do it anyway. So I thought it would be fun if you would go head to head with Jesse.
All right.
Two musicians in the room right now. And we do like a little, I don't know, bar for bar, poem for poem kind of vibe. So I've got a couple words.
We're going to write poems right now.
Yeah, like right now.
All right. But
We talked about this briefly.
So you've been prepped, bro. You've been writing in the back.
My prep is that, you know, I'm not really a profound wordsmith like yourself. So I've got the side of ChatGPT, and I feel like that's only fair. Do you think, or is that too much?
So I'm going against ChatGPT. Let's go.
Joshua, it's not versus me. I'm ChatGPT's vessel.
I like this. I've been waiting for a clash with ChatGPT.
So we're going to do JLS versus JBF.
Okay.
That's what we're doing. So I've got three words, and you have to put them into a poem.
Okay.
Could be two bars, could be four bars, six bars.
All right.
Whatever you can give us. So the three words are...
Do you need like a pen and paper?
No, let's...
You got it.
Offer it, yeah, like right now. Okay, the three words are sound, fountain, and mirror. Not you going, but... Yeah,
sound, fountain, and mirror. All right.
He's cooking.
All right. Do you reckon we'll cut this? You ready?
Ready to go?
Poem.
No, this is what's special about this. Is usually it's like, let's freestyle, here's a beat. Now it's like, no, let's actually write some poems. Sound, fountain, and mirror.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. All right. Yeah. I heard, I'm jumping in. Is that cool?
Yeah.
I heard the sound of silence, and then I heard it clearer. I ran to the fountain of youth and found myself before a mirror. I learned the things that I can hear don't always make a sound. And the way I yearn to look isn't always so profound.
Wow.
Don't ask me what that means.
Now I've got to go after that. Are you kidding
me?
Even with the assist of ChatGPT, I feel like...
Give us what you've got. Or what chat's got.
It's a three paragraph spiel.
Hey.
Should I cut it down?
You got to cut that. He goes to ChatGPT, nice job, make it shorter.
Cut this down.
Yeah, cut this down, please.
Cut this in half.
No, cut it into four lines.
And I'm not even going to read this until I read it for the first time.
Okay.
So this is just going to be
I'm really intrigued.
A sound drifts soft upon the air. A whispered call and a silent prayer. The fountain sings with silver streams, a song of love, of hopes, of dreams. It calls me forth, it draws me higher, a love that lifts, a holy fire. It didn't have any of the words.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it missed one of them. There was no mirror.
That was such an L.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, no.
You won.
It's just, you know... Chat hasn't been through anything.
Yeah.
Wow.
Chat hasn't paid for its words.
No, it's true.
You know, it's like...
It felt a little meaningless.
It did. It did.
No backing.
It did.
I even put on like a slight poet voice.
I heard that and I liked
tried
that.
It. Yeah. I tried it.
And I thought to breathe life into it.
I thought that could tip this in your direction because your delivery was beautiful. You got paid for your words though. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Words are expensive.
So... When you look in the fountain of youth,
yes,
you use it as a mirror.
I did.
When was that for you? When did you pay that cost?
You know, just then. I went through it all just then.
That's amazing.
That is very talented. I love that.
I'm gonna have to go back and go into my subconscious. Like, what was my subconscious saying? Then I have no idea. Good choice of words.
That is a great choice of words. Thanks for that, Zen.
Thank you all.
So we're seeing the final product, right? We're seeing this brilliant, handsome writer, poet. Throw handsome in there. It's you're gonna laugh, but it's true. Like, we all want a beard like that. Let's be honest.
even me. I too want a beard like that. It's great.
And you know, we can see you as this great wordsmith who can come up with something that moves you.
Yeah.
In a second. That's amazing. What a gift. I guess I'd love to look back a little bit. I think sometimes it's helpful. You said, you know, ChatGPT hasn't been through anything. His words don't cost anything. Referring that you have been through some things. You have had to make costs at points. And I guess I'd love to just hear your story a bit. What was your growing up experience? Were you always a Christian? Start there. What was your family like?
Good question. I mean, like the headlines, I was born in London, but was went over to Pakistan. My parents were missionaries in Pakistan, so moved there with my sisters. So that was home, and that was normality until we came back to England. And so England was like disorientating because I wasn't home. I grew up in like the base of the Himalayas with a pet goat. And that was my world, you know?
Wow.
And I came back here and I didn't know who David Beckham was. And I didn't know we could drink from the tap. And I'd never had a McDonald's. And, you know, I was disorientated here.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I kind of moved through life pretty quickly, that stayed with me, that sense of disorientation.
Mm.
Like, who am I? Where am I? Anytime I meet someone new, it's like, what is your accent? You know, like, where are you from? And I don't really know the answer to the question. Mm. You know, I've grown up around the story of Jesus my whole life and have been shaped by my parents' faith.
Mm.
If you've grown up in that environment, that will be true of you as well, whether you realize it or not. But probably in my late teens was when I kind of had a head-on collision with my disorientation. With a sense of, okay, this disorientation, this inability to answer the question of where are you from is having some pretty adverse effects on my life. I'm making some pretty damaging decisions. And I went through a period of kind of diving into that, which ultimately led to me leaving England for 5 months and going to a Bible school in Toronto where I met my wife and I met God. Like in the same 5 months and
gosh,
I mean that was 2010.
Gosh,
this is a while ago.
Yeah,
and then we've been on this wild journey ever since of finding ourselves in God and finding more and more of like what He's called us to do and made us to do. And creativity is a huge part of that. Family is a huge part of that. So that's a little 360. Those are some headlines. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's so many questions. I mean, growing up in Pakistan, I don't often meet people who have that as their background.
Yeah.
What do you think that birthed in you in terms of God's heart when you became a Christian?
And also, what did you see?
Tell us about the goat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I had this goat that I loved that came to a very tragic demise.
Oh, no.
We left Pakistan for a month of like respite in England, and we gave it to the neighbors to look after.
Mm.
And they thought we were giving it as like a feast.
Oh, they looked after it.
So they looked after it real good.
All right. Or it looked after them.
No. Yeah, that's it. That's it. They got some protein. So I came back to find out that my goat had been, you know.
How old were you?
I was, I don't know, like 8. But you got to imagine like this is your dog. Tragic. Like this is like, this is my pet, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's my next tattoo actually is a goat because
really?
I'm like, I need to commemorate.
Did it have a name?
It did. I'm not going to share the name.
Okay.
I'm not going to share the name.
That's all right. It's personal to you. Keep it.
And any of my friends watching this are going to be creasing up. We're going to move on from that question. I'm going to answer both of those questions
because they're
beautiful. And I think, poverty would be the quick, you know, I grew up in around poverty, poverty.
Yeah.
So there's an image that still lives with me, which all these years later is visceral of people begging in the bazaar, the market. And just a guy who would see regularly and he was like missing limbs. And I remember saying to my dad, like, how did that happen? And I'd always ask him these questions. And he said, well, over here, it's more profitable to be in this position as a beggar than not. And so basically nodding to the fact that this would be done to him as a child. And I grew up with this visceral sense, as we all do in one way or another. Sometimes we just find it out a little bit later. There is a fly in the ointment, like something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Like there is a brokenness in this world that you can't just plaster over. And I watched my parents give themselves to that brokenness for its healing and its restoration in the way that they could. And I saw that daily. So my faith has been so formed by those two elements. Like suffering is a huge part of my faith, like an awareness of our suffering world and an awareness of our role to play in that. And you find it out at some point or another. You know, we spoke, you know, off air, just already a sense of what you've been through and the points where you're like, I can't go back from here. Like I've seen too much.
Yeah.
That happened for me and my sisters probably at quite a young age in quite a like drastic manner.
Mm.
So yeah, my faith was forged in that. And that's been something I've come back to a lot.
Mm. Wow.
And also just hospitality, yeah. community was, yeah. especially it with the believers over there. So Muslims that had given their life to Jesus and had lost so much as a result. And then you go to their house and they would feed you and would celebrate and they would pray. Mm. Like when I think about their prayers, it's like prayers I've never heard since, you know, prayers of, you know, prayers with no bravado and just absolute generosity towards God in terms of like, oh, we're just so thankful. Yeah.
And so your poetry.
Yeah.
You can like poetry, poverty, like this heart for justice, this heart to put a Band-Aid on this big wound.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd assume, oh man, you care deeply about these things. And so what's the next call of action? I guess I'm going to start working for a charity and be like on the foreground of Pakistan and do all the like work hand by hand, or be a big head of an organization, help compassion, sort this and that. And you find yourself as a poet. And I think, and that's not in any way a discredit. I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, extremely.
And I think of that quote that I'm going to totally button because I don't have it on my head. But when the Czech Republic is going through the big civil war thing and I can't remember who it is, one of the presidents is basically saying, don't give me these clever wordsmiths and these governments, give me the artists and the poets, and then you'll have the heart of a nation.
Yeah.
That's the thing that infiltrates and shapes culture, the artists, the poets. And so I think it's not I don't think you've designed it, but I think it's very strategic the way that God's placed you.
Mm-hmm.
Just from hearing a little bit of your heart and a little bit of who you are now. How do you see like this passion for poverty and this passion for words marry each other and come together in your everyday life?
It's great.
Sorry,
that's it is great. It's a stunning question. And beautiful, beautiful like, observation. Yeah, it would begin for me as it would have for you, I'm sure, when you heard the songs and the poems that captured a sense of your own displacement. And that was in my early teens. And it was, well, actually before that, it would have been listening to my dad's music. I remember hearing Tracy Chapman for the first time. We used to live in this like really rural village, be like a 9-hour drive to Islamabad, the next major city. We'd just listen to cassette tapes.
Wow.
You know? And my dad had this Tracy Chapman album. There was a song on there. I can't remember what it's called. I wish I did. I should be able to quote it. But she's singing about hearing domestic abuse. And so she goes, it's a cappella. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the walls. And it's just like, I'm 7 and I'm like, I can't fully contextualize what she's singing about, but I know she's singing about something of suffering. It's just there. And then I find hip hop and the poets, and I'm like, wow. So there's this tradition where people bring language to suffering, and not to necessarily beautify it or make it better, but just to name it, you know. And found myself beginning to engage with that and really connecting that to my spiritual lineage, you know, the lineage of the prophets and Christ himself, of announcing what it means to be here and what it feels like, you know, to be here. And maybe I'm going too far ahead, but the answer ultimately to our theodicy, to our suffering, for me has been presence. You know, it's the God who is present with us, who dwells with us, which is a whole nother conversation. So perhaps a foretaste of that is the poet announcing, I'm with you too, or I've walked this path as well, or, you know, there's this print you have of Psalm 23, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And ultimately the art that really connects with me are those who are leaning into that. Wow. Though I walk through the valley of this, and suddenly the valley feels less isolated. And so the poets I'm drawn to, the writers I'm drawn to are those who are announcing the reality of what it is to be here.
Wow.
And whatever you're going through, I mean, the people I've been able to interact with through my work has been so startling, so humbling, because what they're saying to me is ultimately the words just help me feel less alone. It doesn't change the fact of what's happened. You know, I shared a piece recently at my friend's. My friend lost his son to murder in Brixton, and I shared a poem at his memorial, and it almost felt like what is this gonna do, you know? And I wrote it from Matthew 5, blessed are those who mourn, mm-hmm. for they shall be comforted. And I began it by saying, this is the blessing none of us want to receive. No one wants this blessing. Mm-hmm. But when it's time to receive this blessing, we're all so grateful that it's there. What is the blessing in mourning? That they will be comforted. Mm-hmm. And so I give this piece and he, you know, we share this moment. We're just sharing this moment around this phrase, mm-hmm. blessed are those who mourn, they shall be comforted. Mm-hmm. I guess all I'm trying to do is stand on a soapbox and announce that over and over and over again in as many different ways as I can, you know?
Yeah.
And I've shared that poem, in a number of horrific moments. And every time it feels so futile. Mm. And then I realize that it's so important. Mm. And just to give some language, and I know it's important because that's happened for me. People have done that for me, you know?
Wow. Gosh, that's deeply profound. These words that you're speaking, this like this understanding of naming things mm-hmm. and giving language to things and not shying away or putting on playing pretend mm-hmm. like putting a smile on mm-hmm. is such an important message. Particularly in church, particularly in a place where you're meant to smile because you're blessed because right. you're mourning, right? Blessed are those who mourn. Right. Okay, I'm going to smile through the pain. No. And I think it's a real, real profound message that we need to hear. One that I wish I had when I was 16.
Same. Like there's, you know, when we were in Pakistan, Princess Diana died, right?
Wow.
I think 96 or 97.
Yeah.
Same time Tupac Shakur died.
Yeah.
Like there was these two huge events that as I've grown up, I realize the things that have, you know, been influential in me as an Englishman and as a, you know, someone who's pretty devoted to the story of the arc of hip hop, they have these kind of parallels. When we were over there, my dad was tuned in to BBC and it showed the laying of the flowers outside Buckingham Palace. Mm. 60 million flowers. People traveling, getting coaches down from Newcastle to lay flowers.
Wow.
Those weren't people who were explicitly grieving the princess, you know. Mm. That was the outpouring of ungrieved grief in our nation. That's a nation that's gone through two world wars and so much more that's never had anywhere to put it. Mm. Keep calm and carry on. Mm. They say keep calm and carry on. I say read the Psalms and tarry, son. You know, if you want streams of still water, still as Avion, sometimes you got to rage against the machine and write your lyrics by the rivers of Babylon.
Wow.
Sometimes you have to name what's wrong. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child and a bastard son. Sometimes you just have to let it out. Otherwise, where does it go? It just stays there. So Diana dies and everyone's putting the flowers down because there's all this ungrieved grief. And the blessing, blessed are those who mourn. The thing about this is, you're blessed when you announce it, because until you announce it, that which is hidden cannot be healed, you know?
Wow.
And when you announce it, you give God the opportunity to do what who he is, which is to comfort you.
Mm.
I'm sending one, you know, the comforter, the counselor. So God is just like eagerly awaiting the opportunity to bring comfort. Mm. You know, you sit with a friend who's gone through something and how you doing? I'm all right. They're both denying themselves the opportunity of the freedom of expression, but they're denying you, like the friend, the opportunity to comfort them.
Mm.
And there's so much illusion and disillusion around denial of suffering. When we deny our suffering, we deny reality. Like,
yeah, facts.
Mm. Right? Everything is a mirage when you deny your suffering. Everything. Mm. It's the second line of the Beatitudes.
Mm.
The Beatitudes are like Jesus' inauguration speech.
Mm.
You know, we just saw inauguration in America, right?
Yeah.
And we see when our prime minister comes out and they stand outside 10 Downing Street. All right, Mr. President, Mr. Prime Minister, give your remarks to the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us who you are. Mm. Tell us what you're about. What are you going to do with your term, with your time? And they do it. And everyone decides whether they're about it or not. And they'll be criticized. Jesus stands up. The Sermon on the Mount. This is the great inauguration of the kingdom. This is the king saying, if you want to know what my kingdom is about, this is it. You ready?
Mm.
Lean in. First line, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mm. Second line, and blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. It just throws over any other idea or theory about the type of God that is out there.
Yeah.
This is a different, we're working on a whole different, you know, playing field now. And so if you want to partake in the kingdom, poor in spirit, the Greek, you must be empty. Empty of what? Empty of the illusion that you're anything other than a beloved child of God.
Yeah.
And also you must come to terms with there is a fly in the ointment. Something has gone terribly wrong. And in your announcement of that and in your acknowledgement of it, I will give you comfort. That's the promise. I can show up in a minute, but I'll share one more thing.
No, this is brilliant.
I was in prison yesterday with a group of guys, and we was a group of six of us. And we're working through like recovery. So we're working through the need to recover. And step one of the recovery process in the 12 steps is I have found myself to be powerless. And for this, whatever it is to be, I can't control it. I have no power over it. Unmanageable. That's the word. It's unmanageable.
Right.
I need a power greater than myself. And this is, ironically, to your point, like this is the starting point of the Christian faith. The church should feel more like a recovery meeting than anything else. You know, Paul says in his affliction, he hears God say, my power is made perfect in your weakness. If we want the power of God to move in any respect, he's waiting for an acknowledgement of weakness, you know?
Yeah.
You want the revival? Like you want the revival tent? You need to make a recovery meeting. Like that's where revival comes. Like, yeah.
Oh man, so beautiful.
It's so good. I had so many like thoughts while you were talking. And every time you shared something, it was like, I can see different people in the Bible. Like as you're sharing, like I really love your origin story of like, oh, I'm like this English kid, but then I moved to Pakistan and then I've seen a bunch of things and I've moved around. Like I find it so interesting that God kind of raised you in your own unique experience. Like not many people have experienced what you've experienced in life, which means that like you're just this empty vessel that was able to see so much and just absorb. Like you have this unique point of view, like you were almost born as a sponge. And I feel like God's like put you like for a young age, like most of your journey was just taking in things, taking in the brokenness, taking in the pain, taking in the fall, like taking in like just life in life in its realness. And I think that's why you're such a talented communicator, because you are able to acknowledge the elephant in the room and actually name it and say it. And I think in culture, well, not just today, but I think culture has always been like just ignoring everything that's around, create distraction, like create illusions, create smoke and mirrors so that we can just survive and get by. And I think that's the thing that Jesus does, is he removes the smoke and the mirrors. He removes all the distractions, because there's a beauty in acknowledging where we are right now. And there's a beauty in holding the present. And I think you just do that. So you just live that. You are a very present person. And I think even in the way that you speak and the lyrics that you create, it's all about holding the present, beholding the present. And I think sometimes it can be like this is so random, but sometimes when I look at images of like angels and of heaven and stuff like that, there's a part of me that feels like disgusted. Like I want to look away. Like it's very graphic. But when you actually look, there's a beauty in it. And I think that's what the present is. There's almost this, I can't look at this. It's so disgusting. But when we actually behold it, there's so much beauty. And I think what you do is you invite people to look a bit longer. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's what Jesus does. So as you were talking, that was like all I was seeing. I was seeing like, you know, when Job goes through his suffering and his friends sit with him.
I just finished Job this morning.
This morning.
Okay.
Like, you know, not afterwards when his friends were going crazy, but initially when Job was like, I need someone to talk to, and his friends just sat. We're like, we're not going to speak. We're just going to listen. Like, I feel like that's the space that you hold. Even like one of my favorite people in the Bible is John the Baptist, because he stands up and he's like, I'm just going to announce, prepare the way, like the kingdom's coming, repent. Like, I feel like you're someone that we need in culture.
Oh, I appreciate
someone that invites people to look at the present.
That's so
it's like, hey, look, Jesus is here. but also healing is here.
Come on.
You know, comfort is here. Like,
come on.
You just announced that. And I think it's so beautiful. Like, God's hand is so obviously on your life.
Yes. I really appreciate that. Yeah. And I pray that that's what I'm moving towards. Mm. Thank you. Yeah, I really received that. Yeah, you've said some things there that are really profound. Behold, that's if there was one word to direct us in the you know, arena we're talking about.
Yeah.
You can't consume what you behold. You know what I mean? Like, we are in an age of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Consuming, create content to be consumed.
Mm.
But if you behold something, you hold it higher than yourself. You can't consume it, you revere it. And I think that's like a shift in the sort of spiritual, in our spiritual maturity of being people of beholding rather than consuming. You can't consume God. You don't go to church to consume worship. You go to behold him.
Wow.
You know? Can I share a really quick poem with
Please.
You?
Please.
Oh my God, this is so
good.
I saw a garden rose turn its face towards the sun. And then it looked at me and said, what we behold, we will become. We're not the sum of all our parts. We are future, present, past. We are absence and we are presence, made of remnants, scar tissues and stars that are dead and buried in the heavens. We are more than just what we are. I saw that self-portrait done by Rembrandt, his face marked by poverty and repentance. I lingered a little longer and then I saw my own reflection. I remembered that we are tethered in our weakness, dependent like flowers towards the sun upon a beauty that's not our own. But now we're taking Mona Lisa selfies. So many filters, but the eyes are still empty, composed of envy, brushstrokes of anxiety, suppressing any hunger for the heavenly, surviving on a diet of pret et mange and jealousy. But I met this monk dressed in robes. He was old and said, my death is readying. And still he stood composed and he said, son, when addressing me. He had a beard like Aaron, so I asked him for the recipe. He smiled with affection, but then with a voice more breath than anything, he said, son, it's been 7 years since I've seen my reflection. So any compliment for my presentation has less to do with intention and more a desire to be free from self-obsession.
Mm.
He said, son, we are